Morning, everyone. My name is Jonita Jones. I'm the Pipeline Risk and Integrity Manager for ExxonMobil Pipeline Company. I also have the privilege of serving as the president of the board of the Texas Conference for Women. So they actually have me multitasking today and doing a couple of different things. I'm pleased to introduce our session topic today. It's leadership in a multi-generational workplace. For those of you who are moms out there and you have children who are grown and you also still in the workplace, you can probably relate to this. I know I can, because we have new employees coming into our company today who are younger than my children are. And so it's very tempting to try and play a dual role there, and you can't always do that. So we have a panelist here for us today. They're going to talk about the four generations that share the workplace but live in four different worlds. We lead traditionalists, still booming boomers, extra independent Generation Xers, and the techs of the die gen wires. It's complicated but critical that we learn how to manage these teams in our workplaces. So we have a mix of leaders and professionals to share best practices and lessons learned from their experiences. Ritu Sharma is going to be our discussion leader today. She is co-founder and president of Women Thrive Worldwide, which is a leading voice in U.S. foreign policy. For 20 years, she has navigated Washington politics. She's built leading nonprofits that amplify voices of women and girls in developing countries, in the U.S., and the global decision makers. She's also the author of an acclaimed book, Teach a Woman to Fish, Overcoming Poverty Around the World. This book was listed as a must-read by President Jimmy Carter. It shows how women triumphing over forces that threaten to keep them in poverty and how others in the U.S. and elsewhere can help. Please join me in welcoming our panel.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much for that introduction, and I want to welcome you all to our panel this morning on leading across multiple generations. We definitely have multiple generations in the room, so I'm expecting a really lively conversation. We are going to talk about the four generations, as Jonita said, and I want to say a little bit about what they are. But first, let me not be remiss, and I want to introduce our panelists to you. We have three really phenomenal women with you here today. Jane Hyun is a internationally renowned executive coach and leadership advisor to Fortune 500 companies. She's written a wonderful book called Flex, that she will be doing a book signing for immediately after this session, about how to lead and maneuver among not just multiple generations, but multiple cultures, multiple identities, multiple genders. So I really highly recommend it. And Jane, thank you for being with us. Mandy Ginsberg, also to my right, is the CEO of the Princeton Review and Tutor.com. So many of you may have taken part of her services. I did when I was studying for the SAT, and it served me well. Thank you. And she's also, you know, I think one person who bridges a little bit Gen X and Gen Y. So very interested, Mandy, in hearing what you have to say. Thank you for being here. Gail Morris is a vice president at Cisco Systems, and she's responsible for running the largest and most profitable market segment for the Americas services. So no small feat. And Gail also has to manage numerous people across generations. So I want to thank them all. Thank you all for being here. In terms of these generations, let me give a little bit of shape and definition to each one, just so we are all on the same page in terms of who exactly we're talking about. And again, these are generalizations. This is not the word of God. This is just what I think about these generations. So first you have the traditionalists, and those are people born before 1945, 1946. These are, for us Gen Xers, these are our parents and our grandparents. They have a very strong work ethic, working hard, putting the shoulder to the wheel, being steady, keeping focused on goals, having much more stability in the workplace is important to them. Then we have the baby boomers, born from about 1946 to 1964, give or take. And the baby boomers are very hard working as well, but wanting to try some different things in the workplace. Rewards are very important to them. Recognition, very important to them. And they're somewhat traditionalist like their parents and grandparents, but not as much so. Then we have the Gen Xers, of which I am one, born about 1965 to 1981, sort of in that early 80s period. And the Gen Xers are, I think, able to flex a little bit more between the generations, but also into a little bit more wanting flexibility in the workplace. Women in our generation are challenging some of the gender norms that we face both in the workplace and at home. And for Gen X men, and some of you I see in the audience, thanks for being here, that can be both liberating and a challenge in terms of how we're redefining and renegotiating our roles at home and at work. And then we have the Gen Y and millennials. Those terms are interchangeable. So millennials and Gen Y, we basically mean the same thing. And those are folks born after about 1980, you know, up to 2000. I don't know what the next generation is going to be called, Gen Z, I suppose. But luckily, they're still in high school, so we don't have to worry about them yet. So the Gen Y, the millennial generation, is really redefining our workplace as they enter corporate and nonprofit America. They want a lot of flexibility. Purpose is extremely important to them. They want to know that they are not just doing a job, that they are serving a higher purpose and a higher mission, whatever that may be. They want a lot of flexibility. They want to have movement. This is the generation where they were encouraged by their parents. They have a lot of attention. They went through an education system that was always encouraging them, and every year there was movement, there was growth, there was a new challenge. And so that's something that they look for in the workplace. They're looking to be promoted, you know, every year, every 18 months. 2 years is too long to wait to promote a millennial. So that both brings, I think, some interesting challenges to our workplaces, but also some really dynamic new energy. So those are basically how we're defining the generations. And I want to turn first to Jane in what she's done across many, many companies in terms of helping to manage across these differences. Can you tell us a little bit, Jane, about why is it hard to do that? Why isn't this something that we can just do naturally? And what are some of the ways that these differences or these challenges can be overcome?
Okay, great. You start with the easy question, right?
Sure.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jane Hyun, and it's really a pleasure to be here today. I've been to other cities in Texas, but this is the first time, and I'm in Austin, so I'm really excited to be here, and great to be engaging with you on this very important dialogue. So just by way of background, I do a lot of work for organizations in helping leadership understand how to work across differences. And so I sort of do a lot of work around leadership consulting and the intersection with that and diversity. So diversity is a pretty wide term and it encompasses a variety of different backgrounds, but it could be cultural difference, it could be generational, it could be around the gender divide. I think that one of the things that makes it so difficult for us to deal with difference in general, and I think this is not just generational, but certainly, you know, relations between men and women and also cultural differences is that, you know, we're just, over the years, you know, we just have not been taught how to work across these differences, and we feel uncomfortable with things when we have to actually talk about them in this way. So if you think about traditionally, how organizations have managed diversity. It's traditionally been about compliance, right? You know, how many people do we have here of this type, right, of this background? It's sort of like what I call the Noah's Ark model, right? We have two of those, two of that, right? And then we have enough of that, so we need to get these, right? So it really hasn't been a perspective of how do we bring these different people in so that we can not just bring them in, but help us to figure out how to actually leverage what they have, right? The thinking process, the kind of communication styles they offer, the ideas they have to offer, all the different elements they bring to the table. And so I don't think we're taught how to work with people who are different from us. And so the concept of when we start managing this team of people and they're all younger than us and they're totally using technology in a different way, they don't know how to interact with us in a way that we consider respectful, I think it becomes a very difficult conversation. And on the other hand, we don't want to get in trouble for not saying the right thing either. So I think from a number of perspectives, we are, I think historically, not been accustomed to working across these different lines.
Thank you, Jane. And we're going to get into more some of what that actually looks like in the workplace and how you might maneuver. And I hope you'll come away with some new skills this morning. So, Gail, tell us about some of your experience with managing across generations and what challenges you've faced and a little bit about how you've approached that.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure if we're supposed to profile ourselves as we introduce, because it was interesting.
You can. You should feel free to do that.
I'm going to feel...
And you can say you're Gen Y if you want. I'm good with that.
I'm a baby boomer, but I think I get my best practice on how to manage. Janita talked about it from experiences at home. I'm married to a traditionalist. My husband's 21 years older than me, and we have a 15-year-old son. So it's really fun at our house. And I view it as the best training for what I do in the workplace. But, you know, just to kind of touch on some of the topics that Jane spoke about, it's really for me and for my leadership team about an acknowledgement of the different life experiences. It sounds somewhat cliche, but when you have a community of Gen X and Gen Y and millennials, but when you have that community working together, there is this interesting perspective that they all bring to the workplace. And when you look at, and I'm in the technology business, I work for Cisco, so I'll use some technology examples. It's really interesting because a Gen X will be very proud of the fact that they've adapted and learned technology. I think everyone here I'm getting some nods. And it's kind of interesting because the millennials on my team are like, yeah, whatever. It's kind of like my kid. Yeah. You know, they expect it. They live it, right? They live it. Whereas a Gen X will have to learn it. You know, there are different ways and approaches in which we all learn and collaborate. I run principally a sales organization. So I have the added dynamic of an aggressive team that is principally type A personalities all working together. And Forbes had an interesting article I just read, and it was about the dynamic of a manager asking a Generation X employee to jump, and the employee jumps and then asks, was that high enough? Mm-hmm. And then the manager asked a millennial employee to jump, and the employee just kind of looked at him and said, why do I have to jump, right? So at the end of the day, I think it really is more about how you dial into what people really feel viscerally is success. And I've used three guiding principles to really chart a course for me and for the leaders on my team, really based around recognition, rewards, and engagement. And I think specifically on engagement, that is the one that has probably been the most critical. Having an authentic relationship, understanding how you're both approaching it with a spirit of hard work driving success, and really what it takes to unleash that potential.
Great. That's really helpful. Recognition, rewards, and engagement. And I think I've run a nonprofit organization for about 17 years, and we have had many millennials. And in managing millennials, I've noticed that there are sort of different kinds. Millennials are not sort of this monolithic group that all act and think the same. Thank goodness for that. There are some that will work extremely hard, and they want to do a good job just for the joy of doing a good job, and they bring great creativity to it. There are some that sometimes want responsibility, and as Gen Xers, we feel they want responsibility without having earned it, without having proven themselves. And then there are some who want to sort of be mothered and nurtured in the workplace. They look at the manager as the parent. So I'm going to ask Mandy, as a Gen X manager, and a lot of what we have now in corporate America is a lot of Gen Xers managing a lot of millennials. Can you share some of your insights about how do you approach millennials, and how do you work with them to bring out their best work, but also to really develop their leadership, because pretty soon they will be in the managerial leadership positions?
That's a little scary. Is he thinking about it? No, so just a little background for me. So I run the Princeton Review, which is relatively new, but I spent almost a decade running Match.com and spent a decade in online. Well, millions of people fell in love as a result of the work we did. But it was really interesting. When it comes to internet businesses and technology businesses, they are vastly dominated by men. 85% of the Match business is on the development and product side. It's changing slowly. And I realize looking out at this sea of women, which is so cool for me because I never get to do this, women nod. I actually know you're listening. Men don't nod. Sorry. I know there's a few guys over there. I'm always usually, but it's amazing. People are like, yeah, okay. I had an interesting morning this morning. I flew in this morning, I landed and I used an Uber, and I get in the car with this driver, and her name was Amanda, and I found her story really fascinating and quite relevant to the discussion that we're having. So she was 29. She was a mammographer, she was a technician for mammograms. And I said to her, when did you start working as a driver at Uber? And she said, a couple months ago. And she said, which was so interesting, she said, first of all, where I'm working is changing, and there's too much pressure, there's too many patients, and we just sort of can't handle it given all the changes that's happening. But what she said is, there's two things I value: culture, and it's become so corporate. And that, I think, really, it sort of spoke to me, especially given what I've seen over the last 15 years of my career. And then she said, flexibility. She said, I didn't have it at flexibility, and I couldn't identify with this corporate culture. I've spent a lot of time working with millennials. In fact, I'm by far the oldest person in the room. At least at Match, I was by 5-10 years. Anytime I'd be in a room, I actually felt that I had a responsibility. So I had to adjust, not the folks coming into their sort of 20s having to adjust. There's a couple things that really mattered at the culture at Match, and now in ed tech, what we're trying to do is really infuse a lot of innovation and technology into the Princeton Review, which is a business that my company just bought a couple months ago. So really changing a 30-year-old culture, which is really also a very interesting dynamic. But the thing that I think for me, which is so important, especially getting millennials to feel engaged, passionate about what they do, is one, they do care, and they care a lot about, well, this is the thing that crosses every generation, I think. You come to work because you want to have an impact, and you want to feel good about what you're doing, and you want to be, I do think there's a level of recognition that's important across every one of us. I feel that. But culture is really important. Fun is really important. Having close relationships with people you work with is really important. And I thought I would just share a couple things that we do at Match and now at the Princeton Review, which are such small things that have such a big impact on the culture. And I think it bridges the gap between different generations in the organization. I always realize that doing tiny things can have such a profound impact. So I'll tell you a few of them. Some of them are probably not culturally appropriate for some of your businesses. So during the World Cup, I actually stopped work and I put up big screens around, and I don't even think people knew what the World Cup was, but I thought, I'm going to get these guys to all sit in a room. It was really fun because we ended up having bets and teams. So I think that part, sort of having fun, which we don't always prioritize because we're all so busy at work. And we also do things like bourbon tastings, and we bring kegs in every month. So, I mean, we definitely have to do that. And I think the other thing is that for us, millennials hate dress codes. I mean, you guys can, I'm seeing people nod there. They really do hate dress codes because it's really about what you're doing, not how you look. And I think that we actually have to, instead of sort of forcing this idea about the culture you're coming into, part of it is evolving and making sure that we're creating an environment for this next generation of workforce. And then I think the last thing, and then I'll pass it back, is it's really easy. I think there was a comment made about, you know, the people that are actually coming to the workforce are kids' age, which is true. I mean, my I have a daughter who's going to be in college soon. But listening to them is so, and I can't even believe I say them, listening to them is important. So I work for a big media mogul by the name of Barry Diller. He's run tons of media companies worth a gazillion dollars, happens to be married to Diane von Furstenberg, who is so cool. But what I found, which was so interesting, is that when we have these big meetings, it doesn't matter if it's the youngest person in the room or the oldest person in the room, the ideas come from every generation. And sometimes being more astute in listening and asking those questions to the millennial generation is so critical to the future thinking of your business.
That's very helpful, Mandy. I wrote down what you said in terms of what we should do. So watch the World Cup, bourbon in kegs, no dress codes, and listen. So that's good advice, I think, for life. I want to tell a little bit a story about engagement that you also might find helpful to you. And because I think there's, as a leader, you want to channel engagement. And if you're not careful, I think with the millennial generation, you can spend a lot of time engaging on things that don't build your business success. So as a nonprofit organization, we have to really look at our budget carefully every single year. And this one year, we didn't feel that we were going to have the resources to have coffee and tea and filtered water. I mean, these are the kinds of things we have to sweat over as nonprofit CEOs. And so we were talking about this at a staff meeting, and I kind of announced, you know, well, I'm really sorry, but we're not going to be able to do this next year. Oh my God. It was such a big deal to the millennials. And we sort of started to have this conversation about it, and we really got into it. And so a couple interesting things came out as a result of that. One was that it was really important for them to understand the financial issues behind it. What was driving that decision? And to be able to have a say in the outcome, right? So we have to give something up. We have to give something up that costs us about $3,000 a year. And what do you all want to give up, right? So what happened is we ended up sort of putting that question to them. You all decide, come back to the next staff meeting and tell us, you know, what is it that you want to give up? The interesting thing is they came back and said, we'll give up coffee, tea, and water. But we got there a different way. The other conversation we ended up happening was, is this what you really want to engage in, right? Especially since you came to the same conclusion, right? We also have to look at our strategic future. We're beginning a strategic planning process. Wouldn't you rather spend your time engaging in that conversation? Because our time is limited, especially our time together as a whole team is very, very limited. And so I think what I needed to do is push their consciousness a little bit. Yes, engagement is good and it's important, but channel your engagement towards things that really, really matter. And maybe let management make some of the decisions that maybe matter, maybe don't matter, but everyone can't be part of every single decision because we don't have enough hours in the day to discuss everything. And so those were just a couple of an example of how we managed engagement in a new way. So let me ask each of our panelists kind of, what are two or three other concrete things that you think the managers in this room or the employees, because that relationship is a two-way relationship. It's not all the responsibility of the manager. It's not all the responsibility of the employee. So what are some things that we can do both as employees and managers from a very practical level that might facilitate a better relationship? So Gail, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, just to kind of pivot on engagement, I think actually having the employee see a more vulnerable side of yourself mm-hmm. is probably the most I think for me, one of the most impactful ways to build a relationship across a broad spectrum of generations. And you can do that through shadowing, follow an executive around for a day, and between texts from your husband, your son, worrying about earnings, running a large business, you really get a chance, a team member can get a chance to see a whole different perspective. I mentioned earlier, we're obviously Cisco, the technology company, and we're in the business of collaboration, and video is a big part of how we communicate inside our company. We leverage our video platform as a critical part of how we engage each and every day. So part of that, the linkage to the vulnerability is, for my team, the entire organization, our interactions are all done through our platform and through video interactions, which is very comfortable for the millennials, which was not so comfortable for the baby boomer who joined the company 7 years ago. But I will tell you that getting on a video call with a baseball hat after you've come back from kick class, and being the one to put video on first, it just puts a whole different perspective on your relatability. So small things are good. Big things are, and formal programs for us at our company have worked really well. We have formal shadowing programs, reverse mentoring programs. Whenever I do engage in a reverse mentoring relationship, I get so much out of it. I get perspective. I get ideas. I get a grounding on this is what's happening in the world from all generations.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. No makeup while video. That's a really, I think, helpful insight in addition to, I know that wasn't your core insight.
And you actually get, some people introducing pets, family members, and other things. So it's always fun.
Yeah. No, it's real life. It's real life. And I think that's what a lot of people want to know, that as managers, we have real lives, and we know that they do too. So Mandy, what are some other concrete things that you might suggest?
So there's two things that, that I've seen work really well. The first thing is that when people come on board an organization, the executive team has, we meet once a month, not with the same group necessarily, but once a month where we sit down and we actually do, the guy who used to work there used to be British, so we do scones and tea. And so we'd sit down, and I think, you know, this whole idea of showing vulnerability and showing, you know, saying you don't know the answer, but it's all about transparency. So often I'll sit down and I'll talk about what's happening with the business, the good, the bad, you know, what I'm worried about. And then I'll ask people individually. It's not often where executives sit down with someone who's 3 years or a year or a month into the organization and say, what do you think? I mean, you've got a great perspective because you haven't been here. So I think that works. And the other thing, too, I think maybe it goes across many groups, but millennials talk to each other a lot. And so if you can just influence a couple of millennials, they will start, you know, sort of word passes quickly that, oh, my gosh, these people actually care about what we say. So that's one piece. And then the other one, which I know, I feel like it's so funny. The businesses I run are so intense and they're so hard that it sounds like we're having so much fun because I talk about culture and fun. It's, maybe it's imperative because they're so intense, but, so I had this notion of, I talked a lot about culture at Match and also at the Princeton Review. And what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to force down my culture, my perspective. I didn't find, you know, there's often when there's a founder of a company and they've created it from their basement, their garage, it's a little bit different, but I wasn't the founder of these companies. So what I thought was, which had a pretty interesting impact, is that if we can create this culture committee or a fund committee, and we take people who are across, so multi-generational, across the organization, and we have them create the charter, which does a couple things. One, it forces people who work together that generally wouldn't have access to each other. And then it also, it really gives a platform to some of the folks that are walking into the organization, and within 2 years, they have the ability to be a part of something and shaping the culture, and then to stand up in front of a group this big and say, here's what we want to do. Here's what the group of seven of us want to do. And I think that this whole idea of like having people feel like they have the transparency and a real sort of stake in this, has a big impact for me with retention, just because it's so competitive. I mean, development, product, UX, designers, it's so hard to keep great people just because there's so much competition for those spots that, if we don't do this, people won't have a reason to stay. And part of my job is giving people a reason to stay every day.
Thank you so much.
All really good advice. So I think one of the things, and I work mostly with larger companies when I do some of the consulting I do, one of the things that I think the younger generations of workers struggle with is because they're so junior usually when they're starting in the organization, their voices are not adequately heard, right, by the senior leadership. And there is some new research that has come out in the past year that shows that if you really want to have innovation and if you want to have better ideas, you need to hear from those divergent voices in the organization that have not been heard before. So by definition, innovation is winning in new markets by unleashing the potential of untapped customers and potential client bases and hearing from the voices of those who you may not have heard before. And so I think if a manager can do whatever he or she can to unleash this, right? So to really kind of bring some of the perspectives that the younger generations of workers have to bear and creating forums for that. So I think you heard some ideas for that through focus groups. I know a lot of companies have ERGs or employee resource groups now where there are millennials that are part of them. And then certainly reverse mentoring is a wonderful, wonderful strategy as well. I think one of the things with mentoring, though, when you have them in your organization is if the mentoring matchups don't work out that well or if there's no chemistry in the mentor-mentee relationship, sometimes they don't go very far. And so there needs to be some facilitation, right, that's made of that, that if your formal mentor is not someone that you somehow connect with and the dialogue doesn't go very deep, there's some other ways to foster that. There's other ways to meet other people so you can have more organic relationships. So I would think so combination of innovation and getting those voices from the Gen Y so you can really benefit from their presence there and then building those relationships.
Great. And mentoring is something that I do a lot of speaking about and can say more about it. But, you know, there are lots of things that you can do to find a mentor. And as a mentor, there's lots of things you can do to find and work with a mentee. So we can talk a little bit about that maybe later. But I want to open it up to you because I know you probably have questions. You probably have things that you want to add to the conversation. So if you will line up at the two microphones in each of the aisles. And we're going to take two questions at a time, one from each microphone, and then have an opportunity for the panel to comment. So this is your chance to get some free coaching and free advice. I know it's kind of a public setting, but please take advantage of it. So first, we'll start one here and then over there.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. And thank you, ladies, for your insight. I've written down a lot of notes that are really helpful. But I guess my question really to any of you is, I work for a global organization, but at our heart, we are a retail organization. We have very strong branding and a very strong career path. So being in Austin, I see like the kegerator culture is what I call it, you know, ping pong tables and things like that. But how do we give that flexibility and that non-dress code to an organization where that is our branding and we have operational hours that have to be met? It's not like an engineer can come in at 2 a.m. because that's when they work the best. And so how do we keep that engagement with a millennial generation when we do have our branding to keep intact and our operation to keep intact? What ideas do you have for that?
Mm-hmm. Great, great, great question. Thanks. Over here.
Good morning. I appreciate your insights as well. I have a question around one of the challenges we face and what I have seen that appears with the multi-generational culture is the kind of millennial age is wanting to work from anywhere, and if we want key talent, we're going to have to be able to support that. And you know, you've touched on some video conferencing ideas, but really, what programs have you put in place to try to really bring the millennials in? Where I've found I work in IT, so we do have people all over the globe, but a lot of the whiteboarding sessions and kind of ad hoc creative discussions that happen, how have some of you addressed those things with the work from anywhere policy?
Yeah, great question. So the first question I would say is about boundaries, really, fundamentally. And the second question is about, fundamentally, how do you balance the independent work with the importance of the kind of the group creativity, which you want to retain as well. So, Jane, do you want to start?
Tackle the boundaries one. You know, the challenge of you have to get this done, right, within a certain time frame, and you can't just leave or, you know, be distracted completely. I wonder if the concept of sharing a function might be a possibility there, or having some real guidelines to the employees about this is what needs to be done in the course of a workday. Here are some the performance measures that you're going to be measured on. And then maybe giving some loose guidelines about how they can be done, and then having that person come to some realization of how they might accomplish those tasks. So I think the idea of flexibility in some way and giving them options for how to do that might be more helpful than saying you have to work this way in these hours and that way. But maybe more of casting the vision of here's what needs to be accomplished in this time frame. Come up with some ways that you could accomplish these goals, and as long as we can accomplish that and make sure that we're meeting the customer needs or the organizational objectives, you can go for it. So I'm wondering if maybe some flexibility around that might be helpful.
Well, I talked about our work environment and the business that Cisco is in, and I will tell you that I was somewhat of a skeptic 8-9 years ago on working from home and flexibility, but it has been the most productive team and the most productive environment that I've ever worked in 25 years in IT, in technology, and in leadership. I think it really starts with what Jane touched on, which is, you know, expectations, accountability, but not dictating to a millennial or to any team member how to get something done, but an expectation of what the end result is going to be. It also takes, I think, some willingness of the executive team and the leadership team to embrace that. There are certain financial benefits that might help them embrace that as well, but it has been, for me, I think, one of the best experiences of my life in the professional workplace, and it has adjusted my thinking on how I integrate and how my team can integrate their workplace and their life. There isn't a balance. It's an integration, and I firmly believe that. And sometimes the flexibility to work outside the construct of a brick-and-mortar headquarters or building gives you the ability to integrate parenting, to integrate important, you know, personal events and family events. So it's worked out very well for us.
Great. I wanted to make one more comment about this, this sort of work from home. What I've seen, in the business, so I took over this a small business called Tutor.com. It was all, B2B, so we did not go straight to consumers until probably about 6 months ago. The company that I came and took over does 7,000 online, on-demand, tutoring sessions a night, which is sort of staggering. And we do, it's all homework help, like SOS button. The kid is like stuck on calculus so they could go on and they can connect to a teacher within 30 seconds, which is pretty profound. But the reason I say that, well, one, it's this huge relief to parents whose kids are having these homework wars and say, Mom, why don't you understand my physics homework? Which is great because then we've got physics teachers all over the country now that can log on and within 30 seconds are helping your kid. But the one thing I would say, which is it really goes across it goes across every single one of these generations. 25% of our 4,000 teachers are over 50. They love it. They're retired teachers. And what is so remarkable to me, because the world is changing, and I think that there are going to be more and more incredible jobs where you can add huge amount of value, get paid for it, and do something you love from your kitchen. And I think that, you know, the story that I love, one of the stories I love the most, which just sort of shows the power of this, is that, we actually do a lot of work for the U.S. military, and we do thousands of kids that are, parents are active duty. And one of the, teachers reached out to us. This is just a, about a couple of years now, but she said, I had the most incredible experience. This is a retired teacher who was 60, in her 60s, and she said, I was talking to a kid online. Actually, they don't really talk. It's all through Instant Messenger. So, but when, and kids don't, we actually have talk buttons and kids don't use it. But she said, thanks so much for helping me. My mom's deployed. You remind me of her. And so the sort of the idea that we can have, it's not just about, millennials. It's about all of us thinking a lot different in the next 20 years, the way we work and the way we connect to both our bosses or people who work for us or our customers is going to be profoundly different.
Yeah. Let me add a couple of things on both of those topics, because I can really relate to having a place where you actually do need people to come, you know, in a certain time frame. And I think part of it is that whole concept of getting the right people on the bus. And some of it is when you are recruiting, really making sure that the people you're bringing on would like to work within some of the hard boundaries that you have. You know, you do have to be in the store from this time to this time, and we need you to wear the product, and that would be amenable and excited about that. I think some of that challenge is really a hiring challenge and being clear about what those boundaries are and then where the flexibility can be. And in terms of the work from home thing, just one idea, the way that we skinned that cat at Women Thrive was that we had 2 days, Mondays and Wednesdays, where everybody needed to be in the office so that we could have those conversations and the creativity and the group thinking and the connectivity that we needed. And then on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, it was, work from wherever you need to work. So we kind of blended those two concepts and really made it work for our team, where you could have flexibility, but we also needed to really have some group dynamic going on. So let's start over here and then over here.
Hello. I was wondering, as a millennial who is looking to lead in the future, how do you deal with trying to lead people who are older than you? How do you avoid appearing patronizing when you're trying to lead Generation X, or as a Generation X trying to lead baby boomers and stuff like that?
Yeah, great question. Thank you.
And mine can be similar question, just kind of in reverse. As a baby boomer, I work in a very traditionalist atmosphere, very male-oriented. I struggle sometimes with expectation. Understanding expectation, shaping expectation, trying to preserve the integrity of the relationship, but at the same time making a point and making it sink in. So, I it's almost a reverse type question to what she phrased.
Great. Let's go ahead and take two more, because I'm watching the clock and I want to get as much in as I can. So, please.
Hi there. My name's Clara, and I manage a team of many generations. And I've managed teams across geographical boundaries. And I, use video, have for years, do, Zoom meetings, whatever, stand up agile, let them be flexible to the different kinds of management styles based on the people. My challenge is the VPs that I work for, trying to get traditionalists in the workplace to really even care what millennials want. So I have a meeting tomorrow with a VP. And I need to talk to him about purpose. And if you have any little small papers, he's not going to read a book, TED Talks, references you can give me, so I can just give him like a 2-minute video so that it's preferenced about what it is I'm trying to achieve with my team.
Okay. Great question. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Lee Meyer. I'm in talent development at Rackspace. And I wanted to say thank you for the reverse mentoring concept. I love that. I'm totally stealing that.
Yeah.
We do mentor circles, so we have groups so that we can get past perhaps the challenge of the chemistry issues between mentor and mentee one-on-ones. What I would love to hear about is how you may have used sponsorship across the generations and how that's been effective or challenging. Thank you.
Great. So get great questions. Who wants to tackle this?
I'll take the first one.
Okay, great.
So
where was the Gen Y leader here, there? Okay, great. So that was a great question, and I think something that you can definitely do something about, right? So you have potentially a managerial type role you might go into in the future, and you want to be as effective as you can with your team members who may be 10, 15, 20 years older than you, right? So I think the first thing to think about if you're supervising people who are older, and I remember having this experience when I first started working in financial services 25 years ago, and I had to manage a group of people who processed various transactions, and I think I was like 25, and, you know, these people know a lot more than I do. How do I even begin that, right? I think the first thing to do is onboarding it correctly, right? The first couple weeks or even the first week that you're working together, just recognize and let them know this is your first managerial experience, and you want to understand how they like to work, right? So, you know, kind of ask them how do they like to do things, right? Do you want to have status meetings once a week? Do you prefer in person? Do you want to do it on the phone? How do you like to kind of manage the deliverables that you're going to work on together? So, you know, put it in their court and really find out for them how they like to work, how they make decisions, and what are sort of the ways they do that. So that's kind of a first step. And then I think as you go along, let them know what's important to you, right, in the group. I'm sure you have some priorities that you want to put out there. You probably have some management principles you want to put out there. Share with them what that is, and then reinforce that and circle back with them. I think being transparent is important. And then ask for their input, right? They have a lot of expertise they probably can share with you. So asking them how they might do something. Share with them and acknowledge what they do as experts, right? And say, hey, I want to work with what you do best. And I recognize that you have a lot of experience. How can I team up with you to make sure that we get the best results? I think those kinds of perspectives always work better than telling people what to do, right, and letting people know that you're in charge. So I think those kind of principles may carry you pretty far.
I can take the next, which is the opposite.
Yeah, great.
Just because I've dealt with that a lot. So one of the best leaders I've ever seen, someone who's actually a colleague of mine, and she said to me once, I never micromanage or manage a person. I always manage a project or a process, which sounds so dumb, but it works really well because instead of that person, so all of a sudden, instead of sort of talking esoterically or about the relationship, you're sort of working on something and you have a big focus. And then it's all about expectation setting and figuring out how to be helpful and what do they need. And then also obviously really knowing where someone is strong and weak and making sure that you both support them and give them the tools they need, but hold them incredibly accountable. And so, you know, I've tried it throughout my career, and I know people don't like to be managed. They don't mind if a project's managed, but I do think that that helps, especially with the millennial generation.
And I'll take the next question, which was how to shift thinking for a traditionalist. You know, I think there's nothing more inspiring than the innovation and the power of a diverse team working together to come up and solve a problem. We've all talked about it here. I think in particular for millennials, the input, insight, and just sheer enthusiasm. You saw it from this gal who asked the question there, and I feel like my team and my population of millennials come at really tough problems in a whole different way, and they're fearless. So for the gal who asked that question, I would say, yeah, you can do a primer with a video or a white paper or, you know, whatever you think is an appropriate vehicle for that leader to consume. But go find a tough problem, have a diverse team solve it, but heavily be purposeful on who you put on that team and be purposeful in the inclusion of millennials. And then be purposeful in the report out on that and have the millennials on the front end. Let me tell you, they have no problem talking about the situation, the opportunity, and their recommendation. And it's incredible.
Now, great ideas. And I want to add one little note on someone asked about sponsorship and how you use that. And one of the distinctions that I make is between mentorship and sponsorship. Mentoring is a relationship in which advice is given, feedback is given, and it goes both ways, right? Mentoring up and mentoring down. And it's beautiful when that can be both in the same relationship, which I've managed to find a couple of times. It's really special when that happens. Sponsorship is different. Sponsorship is when somebody really takes you on and in the closed door meeting is advocating for you, you know, or trying to help you forward your career in another venue or another space. Sponsorship is, I don't believe, something that can be assigned, because a sponsor really needs to feel a lot of affection, a lot of respect. They need to feel very comfortable with the person that they are sponsoring, because their reputation is on the line as well. And what I've seen work best is that sponsorship develops sort of organically and naturally, sometimes out of a mentoring relationship. And that's a better way to support that. I don't think that you can assign people to sponsor other people, especially when they don't know them that well. So that would be my advice on that. So, yes, Jane, please.
I agree with you, Rita, that sponsors are typically people who have to sort of find you, or because you're doing well or have achieved a lot, they're interested in sponsoring you. I know a couple of organizations that have worked with sponsorship programs, so I don't know who was interested in that. If you're interested, you can email me and I can share with you what they've achieved with that and what results they got from it.
So we're going to take our two last questions. Yes, please.
Well, I've heard a lot about what millennials need and that the rest of us need to provide flexibility and options and a culture and comfort, and they need to be listened to. I'd like to hear your comments about what millennials can do to appreciate baby boomers, older women and men in the workforce, and appreciate life experience, work ethic, that, you know, I feel like we're accommodating the millennials and not speaking to the millennials about what other people have to offer. And the second part of that is, I worry a little bit as a former psychology teacher about categorizing too much and over-labeling and treating people as, you're a millennial, you're a Gen X, you're a baby boomer, you're an introvert, you're an extrovert, instead of treating people like individuals with not all categories are alike. And I'd just like to hear your thoughts.
Yes. I underline. And again, we're just using these categories kind of to facilitate our discussion, but thank you. That's a really important point. And how can millennials accommodate other generations? So please.
My question is actually for Gail. You mentioned that you work in a sales environment. I manage a sales team, and I am probably like a little bit of a hybrid of an X and a Y, because the time frame that I was born. So my question to you is, as a Generation X / Generation Y, I have employees who are Generation Y, and they're managing Generation Y. So it's a fantastic dynamic. The organization I work for allows that flexibility and promotes our employees very quickly. So just maybe some of your thoughts or feedbacks on how you manage those types of employees.
Great, wonderful. So, Gail, do you want to start?
Sure. And I think that's a wonderful opportunity to have almost... It's a little bit like a close-to-peer relationship, candidly, when you have Gen Ys managing Gen Ys. I think first and foremost, you have to have the right foundation for training, development for your Gen Y leaders. So let me give an example, because you talked about being in sales. In sales, probably more other than any other part of the organization, there's a tendency to promote the top salesperson to the sales manager, so then you're managing the your peers, candidly. And I think where it works really well is when there's a leadership team in place that actually acknowledges you have, you know, potentially two Gen Ys, two peers, that have similar backgrounds, similar experience levels, but one is just slightly above the other. I think the expectation of the leader to set some boundaries, but not lose that authenticity that candidly, that generation expects is really critical.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
You know how to tackle the first Jane, question please. That came up, sure. The whole generational dialogue part, right? And I do believe it's important for the Gen Ys to connect with the boomers and the Xers and the traditionalists and really have that open dialogue in some way. I want to just maybe share a story that might be helpful to you. It's a financial services organization that I interviewed when I was writing the book. And what they did to solve some of the generational differences they had. And so it was this retail banking organization where they had in the teller population a combination of, on one hand, college students and Gen Yers who worked part-time, right, as tellers do, and the other population were traditionalists and some Gen boomers as well. And they worked side-by-side together. And for the most part, many of the... trying to think of who managed more, but it was an equal number of sometimes Gen Yers managing older employees and then older employees managing Gen Y. So lots of room for conflict, right? Lots of room for misunderstanding and resentment and lack of understanding. But what really boiled down to was that they just had different ways of working, right? And so different ways of getting their work done. So on one hand, the Gen Ys, they had higher transaction volume scores, right? Because when they worked with the people who were online and they, you know, came to their desk to help them out with their transactions, you know, they knew how to use technology, right? And so they knew this person's account came up, they knew how to cross-sell all these other banking products, they knew exactly where to find out all those things. But their customer service scores were low, right? Their relationship building skills, understanding how to really build rapport with new customers, old customers, right? Remembering the people's names and that kind of thing. Whereas the older generations of workers had lower transaction volume scores, but higher customer service because they knew, right, how to build the relationship. They knew the names of the dogs, right, of the customers they saw online. The three generations of family members who are online, they knew them all, right? So once they got into a room and actually had a cross-cultural dialogue and actually understood that both wanted the same things, right, from the organization. Both had the similar set of values, really. Just a different way of operating and different way of working. So it was almost an intercultural dialogue that they had to have. And I think that really helped them understand each other and helped them see that they have similarities as well as differences in the way they demonstrate that. So I thought maybe that can give us some food for thought about how to really leverage our differences, but understand that we do have some similarities to offer, too. Because once we get at that point, then we have a place of collaboration.
Thanks. Mandy, do you want to add anything?
Well, the one thing I would add, which maybe goes to the comment before, is that I think the most important thing, and this goes across sort of generation, is I believe it's really important to create connections to people you work with. I mean, because that is really what it's about. So it doesn't matter. And there is commonality. You know, it's funny. We talk about the difference in generations. That's true. But, you know, you're a baby boomer. You were once where a millennial was. And we sort of forget that on opposite sides of the fence. My advice would be spend we all think about the best boss we ever had or the best colleague we ever worked with or the best person under, you know, who worked for us. And we kind of go back to not just about how great they were, but we go back to like attitude and that connection and the connectivity between, I mean, it's the personal connection. And it doesn't matter if it's on a phone or over the computer or, you know, in a video conference. And so I would just sort of remind all of us that, you know, it's all about the people.
Thank you all. And first, I want to just say that Jane has a book signing right after this, so I'm going to invite her to escape while she can. But please stay seated. We're not quite done yet. And just want to acknowledge that I think some of the themes that came out of today that I hope that you will walk away with, but one is that culture really matters, and it is something that you can create with intention. And spending time with these dialogues across generations, and I really believe in the last questions, it's not just about understanding millennials and making sure that they're happy. It's about everyone understanding their peers and their other folks that they work with and understanding where they're coming from. It's about creating those connections and having an understanding. So take time to do that. We are all busy. We all have targets that we've got to meet, but we do need to take time with our teams and with our organizations to talk about things that sometimes we don't want to talk about and can be difficult. There are lots of resources out there to help you with these kinds of conversations. So thank you so much for joining us, and I will hand it back over to Janita.
want to say thank you to all of you for your presentations. We're greatly engaging, and thank you to the audience for your questions, because I think that helped fuel the discussion quite a bit. Thank you.